Hello and welcome to the Answers for Cancers podcast. I am your host, Anne-Marie Fay.
And I'm Michelle Matthews.
Together with some of Ireland's leading experts, we want to unravel what it truly means to have cancer.
From consultant diagnosis to treatment plans, from managing your symptoms to supports available, we have it covered. So whether you're a nurse working in oncology or have been personally affected by cancer, this podcast is for you. The Answers for Cancers podcast is sponsored by Care Plus Pharmacy. Care Plus Pharmacy is Ireland's leading community pharmacy brand, offering expert advice and services for a healthier and happier you. Find your nearest Care Plus on www.careplus.ie or follow them on social media for health and wellness inspiration and tips. Dr. Jerushka Naidu is a consultant medical oncologist at Beaumont Hospital Dublin. She graduated from Trinity College in 2006 and she did her fellowship higher specialist training at the Royal College of Physicians of Ireland and Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Centre in New York. She also has a Master's of Health Science from Johns Hopkins University. She's a clinical translational investigator specialising in immunotherapy for lung cancer and immune-related toxicity. She joins us today to discuss the types of lung cancer, signs and symptoms, and the treatments available. She also discusses her very exciting and important role in clinical trials, and we discuss the future of lung cancer treatments. Thank you for taking the time out of your extremely busy schedule to join us today. So good afternoon, Dr. Naidu. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today to discuss lung cancer. It's a topic we've been really looking forward to covering, and we've had a lot of requests about it as well. I might just kick it off by asking you, what is lung cancer and how common is it in Ireland?
Great. Well, thanks so much for inviting me to speak. I'm very happy to be here. So lung cancer is actually the most common cancer of men and women worldwide, and is the most common cancer that leads to cancer-related deaths worldwide for both men and women. Specifically in Ireland, it is one of the most common cancers. And the incidence of lung cancer, particularly in women, is known to be on the rise. So this is certainly something that should be on everybody's radar, since it is an extremely common and potentially fatal cancer.
And would you mind just telling us the different types of lung cancer?
Sure. So when we think about lung cancer, there can be various different types. And what that means is when a patient has a biopsy, the biopsy is looked at under a microscope by a special group of doctors called pathologists. And depending on how a lung cancer or a tumor from the lung looks under the microscope, that will tell us what type of lung cancer a person has. And when we say type, we mean the biology of the lung cancer, how it behaves, how aggressive or not aggressive it might be, and therefore what treatment we should give it. So in general, the most common type of cancer originating from the lungs is called non-small cell lung cancer. And that accounts for about 80 to 85% of all cancers that originate in the lungs or in the chest. There is a less common type of lung cancer called small cell lung cancer. This used to account for about 15 to 20% of lung cancers, but the incidence has now gone down to about 10%. This type of lung cancer happens nearly exclusively in those who may have smoked in their lives. These two different types of lung cancers come from different cells in the lungs, and therefore under the microscope, they look different and behave differently. There are some rarer types of lung cancer that come from different parts of the lung. For example, a cancer that starts in the cells that line the lung is something called mesothelioma. This comes from the cells that line the lung, or the sac that the lung sits in. And this cancer is known to be more common in patients who may have been exposed to asbestos in their lives. There are also some other rarer types of cancers that originate in the chest, not specifically in the lungs, such as thymoma. The thymus is a gland that sits in the middle of the chest in between the lungs. And that can become cancerous in a very small proportion of patients. So overall, when people talk about lung cancers, they can refer to non-small cell lung cancer, small cell lung cancer, mesotheliomas, or thymomas. When people say lung cancer in an everyday sense, they often mean non-small cell lung cancer.
That's great. And I might just ask you some of the risk factors associated with lung cancer. I know you mentioned smoking previously, and I know that's what a lot of people would associate with lung cancer. Is there any other risk factors associated with it?
Yes, so this is a great question. I think our understanding of the risk factors for lung cancer has changed quite dramatically in recent years. So we understand that for all types of lung cancers, non-small cell, small cell, and mesothelioma, that cigarette smoking or tobacco exposure, whether it's through cigarettes or through other means, is a risk factor. Having said that, we also know that in about 15% of non-small cell lung cancers, these can happen in patients who never smoked in their lives. So there are never smokers who develop lung cancer. And oftentimes it can be very hard for them to understand why they developed lung cancer because of this close association that we're familiar with smoking. So in those people who never smoked in their lives or people who smoked very little in their lives, sometimes the genetics of someone's lungs are placing them at an increased risk for lung cancer. There are no precursors. There are no tests we can do that will identify who is more at risk. These are not the genetics we were born with. These are the genetics of the lung cancer that made it become a lung cancer. And we know that these groups of patients who develop lung cancer that never smoked in their lives, they tend to have genetic changes called mutations in their lung cancer. And sometimes their treatments may be related to those mutations, and they may get another type of treatment or group of treatments called targeted therapy. Other risk factors, for example, in mesothelioma, that's that rare type of cancer that comes from the lining of the lung. Another additional risk factor for that is exposure to asbestos. And there are two different types of asbestos that are commonly found in places of work, for example, in shipyards and used to be in older buildings. So any patient who might have worked in the building industry or the shipping industry in their lives may have had some exposure to asbestos.
That's great. That's a really clear explanation. Thank you so much. Is there any evidence-based recommendations that can reduce our risk of lung cancer?
So right now, the only recommendations that are made is smoking cessation. So we know because a large proportion of lung cancers are related to smoking, that the single risk factor that can have a real-time effect on reducing the risk of lung cancer is stopping smoking. I think one aspect of smoking cessation that's important to note is that it's not just the amount of cigarettes a person may smoke in their lives, but it's the duration of exposure that appears to matter. For example, if a patient smokes one cigarette a day for 20 years, as opposed to 20 cigarettes a day for a year, the risk associated with lung cancer appears to be similar and maybe even more in the patient who smoked for a longer time, but may have smoked comparatively less. So I think that's an important message to get out to patients, that it's duration that also matters in terms of smoking risk.
I think that's really interesting because I think some people would think, oh, one is just harmless. You know, I only have the one. So it's really interesting to hear that. I suppose moving on from that, what are some of the signs and symptoms that people should be aware of?
Yeah, so I think the common signs and symptoms for lung cancer, and we know that lung cancer can be very insidious, meaning that patients can have absolutely no symptom and still have a lung cancer. So it is a tricky cancer to diagnose. But the common symptoms would be a cough, a new or unresolving cough, shortness of breath, chest pain, coughing up of blood, and weight loss. The most typical symptom that a patient will present with is a recurrent chest infection, that they have had chest infections back to back that appear to be unresolving. And this is usually an impetus for their local GP to do a chest X-ray or some kind of imaging of the chest, which may sometimes identify an abnormality in the lung that leads to a diagnosis of lung cancer.
That's great. And just going on to the diagnosis, as you mentioned there, if lung cancer is expected, what is the process of being diagnosed? What kind of tests would be involved?
Yeah, so moving on from that, when a patient has symptoms that are concerning for a lung cancer, like we went through, or even the common places where lung cancer can spread, for example, would be the bones, the brain, the adrenal gland, and the liver. So patients may get symptoms related to those areas, for example, pain in a bone, back pain, headaches, pain in the tummy, sometimes jaundice, extreme tiredness. These may all be related to where a cancer may spread. This may prompt usually their GP or a referring doctor, perhaps in A&E or in a hospital, to do some imaging of the lungs. The usual initial imaging is a chest X-ray. A chest X-ray would not be the most sensitive or specific test. So if there is further concern, then a more dedicated scan, for example, a CAT scan or CT scan of the chest will be done. What we're looking for here is to see if there is an abnormality in the lungs or a lung mass. From there, if we see a lung mass, the most important thing to do is a biopsy. The biopsy is what actually gives us a diagnosis of a cancer. We cannot truly diagnose cancer just on a scan. We can suspect a cancer, but the diagnosis comes from a biopsy. So usually, the biopsy can be done either through a radiologically guided procedure, such as a CT-guided biopsy, or through a bronchoscopy, which is a camera test that is done by a respiratory physician, where a person gets some mild sedation and has a little tube placed down the airway and a sample taken either from the lungs or the lymph nodes next to the lungs. Sometimes, if a lung cancer might have gone to another organ in the body that has been seen on a CAT scan, then a biopsy may be done from another organ, for example, a liver biopsy or a bone biopsy. And when this is looked at under the microscope, the cells look like lung cancer cells. And therefore, sometimes patients may get confused that they may have a bone cancer or a liver cancer. But under the microscope, these cells look like lung cancer. And therefore, this means that the cancer started in the lung, but spread to this other organ. In terms of other tests, after a biopsy is done, we do something called staging tests. And that's to see where the cancer may have moved to in the body. The staging tests usually involve some kind of scan of the brain, either a CT scan or an MRI scan, and a full body imaging test, such as a CT scan of the chest, abdomen, and pelvis. Occasionally, we may do a PET scan, but a PET scan is not always required. The second thing to say is on the biopsy sample, if a patient has non-small cell lung cancer, it is standard to do two tests on the biopsy. The first is a stain called a PD-L1 stain. And that's to tell us if a patient may respond to immunotherapy treatment. The second test is to do a mutation test, or sometimes we call this a molecular test, to look and see if the lung cancer has one of these mutations or genetic changes that can link us to a pill therapy instead of immunotherapy or instead of chemotherapy. So those are the tests in total, and they can take some time to arrange in the particular order that a patient may be symptomatic or may need them.
We'll get back to that conversation in just a minute. I wanted to take a moment to talk to you about our immune systems. While we're all so looking forward to spending more time with friends and family this summer, it's really important to give your immune system a much needed boost in order to protect yourselves and the ones that you love. Strengthen your immunity naturally by visiting your local CarePlus pharmacy for expert advice on a wide range of vitamins and supplements available. Now back to our conversation.
And then moving on from that, you mentioned there that you would use those tests to determine the stage of the cancer. Can you briefly explain the stages of lung cancer? We know that generally in other cancers is 1 to 4. Is it the same for lung cancer?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the stages are a little bit different depending on the type of lung cancer. So for non-small cell lung cancer, which is the most common type, there are four stages. Stage one means a lung cancer that is specifically located in one area of the lung and is usually less than a certain size, usually less than 4 to 5 centimeters, depending on the current classification. If that lung cancer now involves a neighboring lymph node, so a lymph node that is very nearby to it in the lungs, then that is called a stage two lung cancer. If you have an abnormality in the lung of any size and one of the lymph nodes in the middle of the chest is involved, that is called a stage three lung cancer. And then if you have a lung cancer that starts in the lung but moves to another organ in the body, including the other lung or any other organ such as the liver, the bones, the brain, that would be called a stage four lung cancer. Small cell lung cancer has a slightly different staging. Small cell lung cancer is staged as limited or extensive stage. Limited stage means that the small cell lung cancer is just located in the lungs and potentially the neighboring lymph nodes and can be encompassed in a radiation field, meaning that a radiation doctor can give it some radiation and give radiation to the total area that's involved with the cancer. If a small cell lung cancer has spread to another part of the body or cannot be encompassed in that one radiation field, it is called extensive stage. And those are the two classification or staging systems for the two most common types of lung cancer.
That's brilliant. Thank you. That's really, really clear. And I thank you for breaking down the process of the bronchoscopy as well, because I think it's important when people are coming in and prepping for procedures that they know what they're coming in for. So thank you for being so clear on all of them. What are the different treatment options when you speak about non-small cell cancer with regards to chemotherapy or targeted therapies like you were mentioning earlier? Do you mind if we touch on some of them a little bit?
Sure. So I'm very pleased to say that the treatment for lung cancer has completely changed in the last 10 years. So I started training in medical oncology in 2010. And when I started, for advanced lung cancer, which is the most common situation, about 80% of lung cancers will be at an advanced or a metastatic stage when they are first diagnosed. The only treatment was chemotherapy. Now, we have a host of chemotherapy options, immunotherapy options, and targeted therapy options. So I just might talk you through what that means. Great. So as I said, about 15% of patients, of Caucasian patients with non-small cell lung cancer, will have something called a mutation. And what that means is an abnormality of a gene that has caused the cancer to grow and become a cancer. So this happens in a subset of non-small cell lung cancers called lung adenocarcinomas. And when we test for those, we can sometimes find these things, particularly in patients who are female, patients who are Asian, and patients who are never smokers. But they can also happen in other populations as well. When we look at those genetic changes or mutations, we're looking usually for a panel of up to 10 abnormalities or mutations that can be linked with a pill that can block that mutation, and when it is blocked, cause shrinkage of the cancer. So the tablets or the mutation that we know probably the most about is a mutation called EGFR, epidermal growth factor receptor. So that's found in a proportion of patients with lung cancer, particularly more common in female Asian never smokers. And in those patients, when we find particularly two types of this EGFR mutation, we can give a pill. And there are a number of pills that have been effective over the years. Examples are osimertinib is the currently used recommended pill. Other pills that have been used are gefitinib, erlotinib, dacomitinib, and afatinib. There are other rarer mutations that happen in lung cancer, such as something called an ALK rearrangement, a BRAF mutation, a ROS1 rearrangement, the list goes on. And literally, with every week or month that passes, new genomic alterations or mutations in lung cancer are discovered, and new treatments for them are being found. So just in the last 10 years, something like 20 new targeted therapies for lung cancer have been developed. So this is an ever-growing field, and it's very important for patients with lung adenocarcinomas to have this genomic testing of their tissue. In people who don't have a genomic alteration or mutation in their lung cancer, we test for this marker called PD-L1. And when it is high, which means greater than 50%, those patients' lung cancers may respond well to immunotherapy with a drug called pembrolizumab. So this is a treatment that's given through the vein, and it's not chemotherapy, even though it is given in this drip sort of fashion. And what it does is it awakens our immune cells to fight cancer the way our immune cells might fight infection. It is not effective in every patient with lung cancer, but it has the opportunity to not only shrink the cancer, but to keep it shrunk for a prolonged period of time. And for the first time, we're seeing in patients treated with immunotherapy that there is a subset of patients that may be alive for several years, even with advanced lung cancer. And this is not something that we had seen prior to the discovery and development of immunotherapy. More recently, we've also seen that immunotherapy and chemotherapy can work very well together. And now giving chemotherapy and immunotherapy together is used in patients who have a lung cancer that has this PD-L1 score of less than 50%. So in those patients, we give them a combination of chemotherapy and immunotherapy. And there are a couple of combinations that appear to be effective. There also appear to be combinations that omit chemotherapy completely and give two immunotherapy drugs. Some of those options are not currently licensed in Ireland, but are available in other parts of the world, such as the US. For small cell lung cancer, the treatments have lagged behind a little bit. So for limited stage small cell lung cancer, we give chemotherapy and radiation together. And a little bit of radiation to the head is an option to reduce the risk of spread of cancer to the brain. In patients who have extensive small cell lung cancer, we give them standard chemotherapy, and there is new information to suggest that adding immunotherapy to that may also be helpful. And we await a formal approval of this combination in Ireland. And again, that is available in other places in the world.
That's really exciting. It's amazing to know how far we've come in such a short space of time. Yes. And I think some of that is probably down to clinical trials, which I think you're heavily involved in, if I'm right. I would love to know a little bit more if there's any clinical trials going on at the moment that are showing very promising results in the treatment of lung cancer.
Yes, so I could really go on and on about this. I suppose what's important for patients to understand is, where do all of our treatments come from? How do we know that you give a certain treatment for a certain stage or a certain treatment for a certain type? So those discoveries come from clinical trials. And really what happens there is a doctor or a researcher comes up with an idea of how to treat a certain stage or type of lung cancer. And they write a clinical trial where a new drug or is given for a particular type of lung cancer in a particular stage. And that trial ends up showing a benefit for patients and becomes a new standard of care after it is reviewed by several regulatory bodies. So we have seen that clinical trials have been massively successful in lung cancer in the last number of years, and that's why our treatments have changed so much. So in this regard, Ireland has a number of ways in which patients can participate in clinical trials. So first of all, we have a national clinical trial group called Cancer Trials Ireland that is a national group, and there are clinical trials focused on the different cancer types that run through Cancer Trials Ireland. Then separate to that, hospitals may also open their own clinical trials for their particular patient population. So I am the national lung cancer lead for Cancer Trials Ireland, so it's my job to develop clinical trials and try to bring in clinical trials into Ireland that bring new exciting medicines that may help our patients with different types and different stages of lung cancer. So some recent information that is sort of very exciting that I think lung cancer families and patients should be aware of is this immunotherapy that we spoke of that looks to be very helpful in patients with advanced lung cancer now looks like it may also help patients with earlier stage lung cancer. So classically, earlier stage, stage one, stage two lung cancer was treated with surgery. And after surgery, chemotherapy was given. And at our big ASCO meeting, which is the big oncology meeting every year in America, a new study was presented just 2 weeks ago showing that if you give immunotherapy after the chemotherapy, patients may get a further benefit. So this is something that looks like it might be exciting in certain subsets of patients with earlier stage lung cancer and is coming from a new clinical trial. The second thing I'd like to touch on is I mentioned that mutation EGFR. There is another mutation that we have known about for many, many years, 30 or 40 years, that's a little bit of a bad actor, a mutation called KRAS. And in patients with lung cancer who have this mutation, they tend to not respond very well to chemotherapy or immunotherapy. And we've never had a pill therapy that has worked well for this. But lo and behold, in the last year, there are two pill therapies that look like for the first time, they will shrink this certain type of KRAS mutant lung cancer called KRAS G12C. So these pills look to be the first effective therapies. And very excitingly, I wrote a clinical trial of one of these medicines called adagrasib for patients with lung cancer who are elderly or who might be a little bit frail and functionally poor. And that is going to be run through a European cooperative group through ETOP. And I will be the global study chair. And Ireland will lead its first ever investigator-initiated clinical trial. So I would encourage every patient with lung cancer to ask if their cancer might have this mutation and to see if they may be eligible to participate in a trial like this.
That's incredible. Yeah, and listen, thank you so much for all of the work that you do. Like, to think that how far lung cancer has come on in the last 10 years, and it wouldn't be possible without doctors and people like you that are so committed to clinical trials. So thank you so much. And thank you for explaining everything so well.
Yeah, it's great to give people hope. And like you said, in those group of patients that didn't have many treatment options before, or people who possibly didn't have a great performance status, it's fantastic to think that there's things coming along for them. So like Anne-Marie said, thank you so much for all the work that you're doing. Is there anything that we have missed that you would like to add in?
No, you know, the other thing I will say that I think is very relatable to patients is that for many years, lung cancer has suffered a stigma related to smoking and related to other factors, to the point where perhaps lung cancer is not a cancer that has come to the fore as a priority, or patients have felt that they may not feel comfortable to share that they have lung cancer, or that this is an area of need. And what I will say is that it is a new world, and lung cancer is changing. We have good treatments, and some patients may do very well with these treatments. And while patients may have smoked in their lives, no one deserves a cancer. And we are here to help and to give the best treatments that we possibly can have. We have learned a great deal from the advocacy efforts of our colleagues in breast cancer through their Pink Ribbon projects and others. I'd like to highlight a really great project called the White Ribbon Project that was developed by a lung cancer survivor in the United States, where little white ribbons are now being worn by patients with lung cancer, and larger wooden white ribbons are being carried by these patients. And I would encourage all those who are in the lung cancer community, whether they be patients, family members, physicians, nurses who are interested in this area, to think about advocating for this cause, wearing a white ribbon and supporting that project as well as supporting clinical trials, because I think only when we are aware of this problem are we going to do better in terms of enrolling on clinical trials and advancing treatments. So that's the other message that I'd love to share with the lung cancer community.
That's great. And we will actually, we'll link the White Ribbon Project on our Instagram and our other social medias as well to let people read up on it and be aware of it as well. So thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to the Answers for Cancers podcast. Please share this podcast with anybody who you think it might help. Also, if you can like and subscribe, it lets people know we're here. You can alternatively contact us on Instagram at @theanswersforcancers_podcast. And if you've any questions on anything that we discussed today, please email us at theanswersforcancerspodcast@gmail.com, or you can DM us on Instagram.